Hi, Kitty. We're continuing Chapter 15 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. I hope you're all curled up in bed and snuggling and ready to listen. "The way he talks," Harry muttered as he hobbled out of the Defense Against the Dark Arts class an hour later. Moody had insisted on putting Harry through his paces 4 times in a row until Harry could throw the curse off entirely. "You'd think we were all going to be attacked any second." "Yeah, I know," said Ron, who was skipping on every alternate step. He had had much more difficulty with the curse than Harry, though Moody had assured him the effects would wear off by lunchtime. "Talk about paranoid." Ron glanced nervously over his shoulder to check that Moody was definitely out of earshot and went on. "No wonder they were glad to get shot of him at the Ministry. Did you hear him telling Seamus what he did to that witch who shouted boo behind him on April Fool's Day? And when we were supposed to be reading upon resisting the Imperius curse with everything we've got to do, and when are we supposed to be reading up on resisting the Imperius curse with everything else we've got to do?" All the fourth years had noticed a definite increase in the amount of work they were required to do this term. Professor McGonagall explained why when the class gave a particularly loud groan at the amount of transfiguration homework she had assigned. "You are now entering a most important phase of your magical education," she told them, her eyes glinting dangerously behind her square spectacles. "Your ordinary wizarding levels are drawing closer." "We don't take the owls till 5th year, said Dean Thomas. "Maybe not, Thomas, but believe me, you need all the preparation you can get. Miss Granger remains the only person in this class who has managed to turn a hedgehog into a satisfactory pincushion. I may remind you that your pincushion, Thomas, still curls up in front if anyone approaches it with a pin." Hermione, who had turned rather pink again, seemed to be trying not to look too pleased with herself. Harry and Ron were deeply amused when Professor Trelawney told them that they had received top marks for their homework in their next divination class. She read out large portions of their predictions, commending them for their unflinching acceptance of the horrors in store for them. But they were less amused when she asked them to do the same thing for the month after next. Both of them were running out of ideas for catastrophes. Meanwhile, Professor Binns, the ghost who taught history of magic, had them writing weekly essays on the goblin rebellions of the 18th century. Professor Snape was forcing them to research antidotes. This one they took seriously, as he had hinted he might be poisoning one of them before Christmas to see if their antidote worked. Professor Flitwick had asked them to read 3 extra books in preparation for their lesson on summoning charms. Even Hagrid was adding to their workload. The blast-ended scroots were growing at a remarkable pace, given that nobody had yet discovered what they ate. Hagrid was delighted, as part of their project, suggested that they come down to the hut on alternate evenings to observe the scroots and make notes on their extraordinary behavior. "I will not," said Draco Malfoy flatly when Hagrid proposed this, with an air of Father Christmas pulling an extra-large toy out of his sack. "I see enough of these foul things during lessons, thanks." Hagrid's smile faded off his face. "You'll do what you're told." Wait, he's not Scottish. Damn it. I don't remember what I did with Hagrid. Is he Scottish? You told me to make him Scottish, I think. I can't remember these things. All right, "you'll do what you're told," he growled, "or I'll be taking a leaf out of Professor Moody's book. I hear you make a good ferret, Malfoy." The Gryffindors roared with laughter. Malfoy flushed with anger, but apparently the memory of Moody's punishment was sufficiently painful to stop him from retorting. Harry, Ron, and Hermione returned to the castle at the end of the lesson in high spirits. Seeing Hagrid had put down Malfoy was particularly satisfying, especially because Malfoy had done his very best to get Hagrid sacked the previous year. When they arrived in the entrance hall, they found themselves unable to proceed owing to a large crowd of students congregating there, all milling around a large sign that had been erected at the foot of the marble staircase. Ron, the tallest of the three, stood on tiptoe to see over their heads in front of them and read the sign aloud to the other two. "The Tri-Wizard Tournament. The delegations from Beauxbatons and Durmstrang will be arriving at 6 o'clock on Friday the 30th of October. Lessons will end a half an hour early." Brilliant, said Harry. It's potions last thing on Friday. Snape won't have time to poison us. Students will return their bags and books to their dormitories and assemble in front of the castle to greet our guests before the welcoming feast. Only a week away, said Ernie McMillan. Oh, I guess he's probably Scottish. McMillan? Nah, screw it. Of Hufflepuff. We gotta reserve that for Oliver. Oh, wait. Did Oliver graduate? No. Never mind. He's a senior or something. Because I remember him talking about his last... Maybe he did. I don't remember. Have we had Oliver this book yet? Man, we've already read 230 pages of this book, and we're, like, I don't know, a quarter of the way done. That's crazy. Maybe a third. Anyways, only a week away, said Ernie McMillan of Hufflepuff, emerging from the crowd, his eyes gleaming. I wonder if Cedric knows. Think I'll go tell him. Cedric? Said Ron blankly as Ernie hurried off. Diggory, said Harry. He must be entering the tournament. That idiot's Hogwarts champion, said Ron as they pushed their way through the chattering crowd toward the staircase. He's not an idiot. You just don't like him because he beat Gryffindor at Quidditch, said Hermione. I hear he's a really good student, and he's a prefect. She spoke as though this settled the matter. You only like him because he's handsome, said Ron scathingly. Excuse me, I don't just like people because they're handsome, said Hermione indignantly. Ron gave a loud, false cough, which sounded oddly like Lockhart. The appearance of the sign in the entrance hall had a marked effect on the inhabitants of the castle. During the following week, there seemed to be only one topic of conversation, no matter where Harry went: the Triwizard Tournament. Rumors were flying from student to student like highly contagious germs. Who was going to try for Hogwarts champion, what the tournament would involve, and how the students from Beauxbatons and Durmstrang differed from themselves. Harry noticed, too, that the castle seemed to be undergoing an extra thorough cleaning. Several grimy portraits had been scrubbed, much to the displeasure of their subjects, who sat huddled in their frames muttering darkly and wincing as they felt their raw pink faces. The suits of armor were suddenly gleaming and moving without squeaking, and Argus Filch, the caretaker, was behaving so ferociously to any student who forgot to wipe their shoes that he terrified a pair of first-year girls into hysterics. Other members of the staff seemed oddly tense, too. Longbottom, kindly do not reveal that you can't even perform a simple switching spell in front of anyone from Durmstrang, Professor McGonagall barked at the end of one particularly difficult lesson, during which Neville had accidentally transplanted his own ears onto a cactus. When they went down to breakfast on the morning of the 30th of October, they found that the Great Hall had been decorated overnight. Enormous silk banners hung from the walls, each of them representing a Hogwarts house: red with a gold lion for Gryffindor, blue with a bronze eagle for Ravenclaw, yellow with a black badger for Hufflepuff, green with a silver serpent for Slytherin. You know, as much as I am a Wisconsin fan, I have to say the badger is a dumb animal. Like, really? Poor Hufflepuff. Anyways. Behind the teacher's table, the largest banner of all bore the Hogwarts coat of arms, lion, eagle, badger, snake, united around a large letter H. Sorry, I cut off there. Harry, Ron, and Hermione sat down beside Fred and George at the Gryffindor table. Once again, and most unusually, they were sitting apart from everyone else and conversing in low voices. Ron led the way over to them. It's a bummer, all right, George was saying gloomily to Fred. But if he won't talk to us in person, we'll have to send him the letter after all. Or we'll stuff it into his hand. He can't avoid us forever. Who's avoiding you? Said Ron, sitting down next to them. Wish you would, said Fred, looking irritated at the interruption. What's a bummer? Ron asked George. Having a nosy git like you for a brother, said George. You two got any ideas on the Triwizard Tournament yet? Harry asked. Thought any more about trying to enter? I asked McGonagall how the champions are chosen, but she wasn't telling, said George bitterly. She just told me to shut up and get on with transfiguring my raccoon. Wonder what the tasks are going to be, said Ron thoughtfully. You know, I bet we could do them, Harry. We've done dangerous stuff before. Not in front of a panel of judges, you haven't, said Fred. McGonagall says the champions get awarded points according to how well they've done the tasks. Who are the judges, said Harry. Well, the heads of the participating schools are always on the panel, said Hermione. And everyone looked around at her, rather surprised. Because all three of them were injured during the tournament of 1792, when a cockatrice the champions were supposed to be catching went on the rampage. She noticed that they were all looking at her and said, with her usual air of impatience, that nobody else had read all the books she had. It's all in Hogwarts, a history. Though, of course, that book's not entirely reliable. A revised history of Hogwarts would be a more accurate title. Or a highly biased and selective history of Hogwarts, which glosses over the nastier aspects of the school. What are you on about? Said Ron, though Harry thought he knew what was coming. House elves, said Hermione, her eyes flashing. Not once, over 1,000 pages, does Hogwarts a History mention that we are colluding in the oppression of 100 slaves. Harry shook his head and applied himself to his scrambled eggs. His and Ron's lack of enthusiasm had done nothing whatsoever to curb Hermione's determination to pursue justice for the house elves. True, both of them had paid 2 sickles for an SPEW badge. They had only done it to keep her quiet. Their sickles had been wasted, however. If anything, they seemed to have made Hermione more vociferous. She'd been badgering Harry and Ron ever since. First to wear the badges, then to persuade the others to do the same. And she'd also taken to rattling around the Gryffindor common room every evening, cornering people and shaking the collecting tin under their noses. You do realize that your sheets are changed, your fire's lit, your classroom's cleaned, and your food cooked by a group of magical creatures who are unpaid and enslaved, she kept saying fiercely. Some people, like Neville, had paid just to stop Hermione from glowering at them. A few seemed mildly interested in what she had to say, but were reluctant to take a more active role in campaigning. And many regarded the whole thing as a joke. Ron now rolled his eyes at the ceiling, which was flooding them in autumn sunlight. And Fred became extremely interested in his bacon. Both twins had refused to buy an SPEW badge. George, however, leaned in towards Hermione. Hold on, I think you're calling, though I'm going to pause it. But hey, we'll finish up, and then we'll upload it. Anyways, so George leaned in towards Hermione. Listen, have you ever been down in the kitchens, Hermione? No, of course not, said Hermione curtly. I hardly think students are supposed to. Well, we have, said George, indicating Fred, loads of times, to nick food. We've met them, and they're happy. They think they've got the best job in the world. That's because they're uneducated and brainwashed, said Hermione hotly. But her next few words were drowned out by the sudden whooshing sound from overhead, which announced the arrival of the post owls. Harry looked up at once and saw Hedwig soaring towards him. Hermione stopped talking abruptly. She and Ron watched Hedwig anxiously as she fluttered down onto Harry's shoulder, folded her wings, and held out her leg wearily. Harry pulled off Sirius's reply and offered Hedwig his bacon rinds, which she ate gratefully. Then, checking that Fred and George were safely immersed in further discussions about the Triwizard Tournament, Harry read Sirius's letter in a whisper to Ron and Hermione. Nice try, Harry. I'm back in the country and well hidden. I want you to keep me posted on everything that's going on at Hogwarts. Don't use Hedwig, keep changing owls, and don't worry about me. Just watch out for yourself. Don't forget what I said about your scar. What do you have to keep changing owls? Ron asked in a low voice. Hedwig will attract too much attention, said Hermione at once. She stands out, a snowy owl that keeps returning to wherever he's hidden. I mean, they're not native birds, are they? Harry rolled up the letter and slipped it inside his robes, wondering whether he felt more or less worried than before. He supposed that Sirius managed to get back without being caught was something. He couldn't deny either that the idea that Sirius was much nearer was reassuring. At least he wouldn't have to wait so long for a response every time he wrote. Thanks, Hedwig, he said, stroking her. She hooted sleepily, dipped her beak briefly in his goblet of orange juice. Oh, gross. And then took off again, clearly desperate for a good long sleep in the owlry. And I think we can stop right there. I hope you like that, my boo, and I hope you're all curled up, very cute, and ready to go to sleep. I love you so much. Sleep well, kitten. Good night.